And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, it's music from and conversation with Emmett Cahill. Many know Emmett from the current iteration of Celtic Thunder. Although working around his Celtic Thunder tours and recording dates, Emmett has been touring as a solo performer as well for quite a few years. And his latest tour has a stop in Palm Desert February 5th as part of the St. Margaret's Friends of Music concert series.
Down by the Sally Gardens, my love and I did meet. She passed the Sally Gardens with
Now, Emmett, while many know you from Celtic Thunder, you started in the world of music long before. I believe piano at the age of 5, and I always ask this, was it something that you asked for, or was it something thrust upon you?
I think, like any of the great things that happen to us in our lives, they occur by happenstance, and I just happened to be born into a very musical family. So music was just part of everyday life. My dad was a church organist and, you know, choir director at our local church, a tiny little church in the Midlands of Ireland. And my mom used to sing in the choir. And so they would be rehearsing for church every Sunday. And I would recall just listening to my mom singing around the house. And my dad was a piano teacher, so he obviously, you know, felt that it was very important for me and my siblings to learn an instrument. You know, the agenda was never for us to be professional singers and musicians, but it was a life skill that he always felt was important to have. Music is something you can share with anybody, and he always just wanted us to be able to take that with us. So every morning before school, we would have a piano lesson. So we would have the piano lesson that would start our day, then we'd have breakfast, then we'd go to school, and there'd be sports and everything else. So music was just a part of the daily timetable, and that was it. It was the same as brushing your teeth. It was in there, and that was it.
That's beautiful. That's actually it. I ended up requesting piano lessons in my early teens, but so many people, I mean, 5 or 7, that's really not uncommon for people to start. But the fact that you stayed with it, even with special scholarships in high school, then in 18, you ended up attending the Royal Irish Academy of Music.
So I left high school in the summer of 2008. I did a thing called my Leaving Cert, which is kind of equivalent to the SATs over here, but it's kind of your final school exam before you would go on to university. And based how you did in that exam, you know, certain courses would have certain points. Thankfully, qualification for the Royal Irish Academy was predominantly based on audition, which was very advantageous for me. Because I was good in school, but I didn't really like the academic side of it. I loved the sport and music and everything else. So I was accepted into the academy to do a BA in musical performance. And what some people may not know was actually I never got to actually finish that degree because after my first year in the academy, I had been on Celtic Thunder's radar and they offered me an opportunity to go touring in America. And, you know, it was a very difficult choice to make, David. Stay in college and study or go touring America on a bus and sing in front of thousands of people. So as you can imagine, I grappled with it for about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And that was and that was the start of it for me. So I give the Royal Irish Academy a huge amount of credit in terms of my development. Fortunately, I never quite got to the point where I have the piece of paper. But I did attend there. I'm on the enrollment there somewhere. So it's all good.
This is the moment. This is the time when the momentum and the moment are in rhyme.
We're not going to be staying with Celtic Thunder, but you filled the spot created by Paul Byron leading the group, is that right?
Yes. So I think late or maybe early 2010, Paul had indicated he was going to leave the group and pursue a solo career. And within Celtic Thunder, you know, it's a group and there's a great group blend, there's a great unison when you hear all of us sing together. But within that, they are looking for very distinctive voices to fulfill certain musical criteria. So the role of kind of the Irish tenor, the kind of classical crossover sound, was being vacated. And they felt that I would be a good fit, albeit I'm sort of, I think, 10 or 12 years younger than Paul. It was kind of like they were bringing in, I suppose, a younger guy starting the journey. And in some ways, I was kind of singing music that was befitting of someone much older than who I was at the time. But I've always kind of been that way, in that I enjoy music that is from the perspective of someone who's already lived a life that maybe I necessarily hadn't lived yet. So I felt like, well, the producers obviously felt that despite the fact that I was only 19, I'd be able to handle that, I guess, and be able to tell those stories honestly and convincingly on stage. And I mean, obviously at the age of 34 now, it's very much a different perspective, because I've kind of gone on many of the journeys that I'm singing about, which really helped. Because, you know, the most important thing, I think, when someone is watching a singer on stage is that they feel that there's honesty and integrity and that they believe every word that they're singing. So I can definitely say at this point that that's very true, because I've kind of experienced so much of what I'm singing about.
Oh, absolutely. And that, of course, does add, I don't know if credence is necessarily the right word, but when you're singing songs about something that you can actually relate to, as opposed to, oh, I don't know, I think of the younger singers singing about how their woman left them. And this is, you know, a 12-year-old hasn't had time to have a woman leave them, much less sing about it with the proper feeling.
Yeah, exactly. To your point, I think when we think of the great singers we admire, you know, they had great voices and they had great stage presence, but ultimately the best singers are the people who are the greatest storytellers. And ultimately, I think that's what we want. No matter what the style is, we want to feel like we're following someone on a journey. Either they're telling the story on the singer's behalf, or they're embodying an experience they had and telling it on stage. So I think that's ultimately what we're seeking, is a little bit of a sort of escapism into someone else's life experience. And then obviously we find, you know, how our own life relates to that. But as I said, I've always said I'm a storyteller first and a singer second.
I'm really excited to hear about that. There are a few songs that I want to ask you about, very specific songs, and very much tied in with the storytelling aspect of it. You have many dates listed on your website, and that's simply emmettcahill.com. Before we go further, do you mind listing off your, Facebook, Instagram, whatever other kind of social media presence you have there?
Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find online, to be honest. My Instagram handle is very appropriate. It's at Emmett Irish Tenor. So, and then on Facebook, just Emmett Cahill Music. And obviously website emmettcahill.com. So I'm very easy to find nowadays. I suppose having sort of a constant social media presence has become a very necessary part of staying relevant and staying in touch with people nowadays, I suppose, especially over the last, even since I started with Celtic Thunder 13 years ago, the game has changed so much, and that you need to be so much more present, because it's a much busier world than it used to be. And there's, I don't know how many videos going up every single day, and you're trying to reach your audience. So that is a challenge, I guess, as well. It's as much part of it as building a show or a tour or honing a craft. And the social media side is really the engine of the car at this point. If that's moving well, then everything else will move well.
Nice. Well, you have many, many dates, as I mentioned, listed on your website, starting in early February, almost every day through mid-March. I mean, wow, thankfully some of these are relatively close to one another. Very recently, I spoke with Doug Leitenheimer, the program director for the St. Margaret's Friends of Music concert series. I should share with you that he felt very fortunate to have been there last time you were at St. Margaret's. I think that was a holiday concert?
Yeah, the first time I did a concert for the folks for the series, it was a Christmas concert, so I did our program, An Irish Christmas, and it was kind of a combination of obviously the classic Christmas songs everyone expects, but also Christmas from the Irish point of view, and some songs that are very unique to us during Christmas time. So yeah, it's a beautiful setting at St. Margaret's. I remember the evening very, very well, so very excited to be coming back.
Crossing you in style someday. Oh, dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way.
Going back to the storytelling aspect of it, there are several that I latched onto from various past performances, and so if they're not necessarily part of your repertoire, I might still want to hear about it if it's still relevant to you. But one of the first ones I'm going to is Moon River, because for some, they'll go right to Breakfast at Tiffany's, and then for some it's Jerry Butler or Andy Williams, or in the UK, Danny Williams. Where does that tune come from for you?
kind of not dissimilar to what you just described. I mean, my mom used to be playing old records in the house when we were kids, and the voice of Andy Williams or Perry Como were the two singers that I heard singing that song. And of course, people associate it with, you know, Audrey Hepburn and Breakfast at Tiffany's. And I think a song like that is timeless. I think, you know, when I sing that today, it resonates with some of the younger members of the audience just as much as they're maybe with their grandparents. And it's one of those songs that kind of surpasses through generations, and it's quite a unique thing for a piece of music to be enjoyed by people who are born decades apart. I think that's a sign of a great song, and Moon River is genuinely one of my favorites. I try to include it in every program because I think immediately what it does is it makes people feel very mellow and nostalgic, and I think nostalgia is something that, you know, even the coldest of hearts can resist a good nostalgic moment. So I like to bring that across in my shows because for me it's nostalgic, it connects me to my parents. But for so many people, when I sing it and I watch the crowd sitting there, and immediately as soon as the introduction to Moon River begins, I can see the memories light up on their faces. I can sense that they're thinking of someone or thinking of a moment in their life. And I think that's what's magic about this type of music, is that it kind of transcends time and it can be a conduit between ourselves and our experiences, which is a very rare thing. I think that's what music is, very, very unique in that regard. There's very few mediums that immediately take us somewhere else, even though we're sitting there in the theatre. We could be thousands of miles or decades in time. You know, suddenly that song just takes you back to a moment, and it's a very powerful thing. So songs like Moon River kind of epitomize so much of that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's really the wonderful thing about music, be it instrumental or song with specific lyrics. I know that Henry Mancini had thoughts of drifting carefree down the Mississippi, specifically mentioning like Huck Finn and Jim. Now, when you're delivering this song, and beautifully done, I must say, what do you have in your mind's eye as you bring out these words? There's that storytelling aspect we were talking about.
Yeah, I think that there's two sides to it. Sometimes when you're singing a song like that, you're kind of envisioning someone else and what their story may have been. Like, often it sounds a little cliche, but, you know, if I see an elderly couple sitting in the theater, maybe I feel like, you know, I'm singing it for them, right? Like, this could be their story. This could be them reminiscing on their first date back in the 1950s or 1960s, a very different world than what we have today, you know, and that, and almost like that song, maybe it was the first dance at the wedding. Because so many people, I'm not sort of making it up, like, as in so many people have come up to me after and said, oh, that song was my first dance, or that song was one that my mom taught me. Or, you know, that's the amazing thing about so much of this music, that, as I said earlier, it's not just being representative of that moment at that concert. It's representative of a moment that is long past, and there's nostalgia and they can relive it. So I'm conscious that maybe I'm representing someone else's story. But also, as I said earlier, I have to find my own story within that too. So I'm immediately connected to when I first heard it at home with my family. So, you know, it's kind of both of those things all at once. So I hope that comes across when I sing it. It seems to be one of my most requested songs.
Again, a very beautifully done tune. And it's one that, again, people can associate with so many things and so many different people, which then means so many different times in their life. Or, I know this song because of my mother or grandparent, you know, whatever the case is. I'm David Fleming with you for KVC Arts. Find many past KVC Arts through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Emmett Cahill, known through Celtic Thunder and his solo performances. And it's a solo tour which has him in Palm Desert February 5th as part of the St. Margaret's Friends of Music Concert Series. More at stmargaret's.org, as well as emmettcahill.com.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong.
There's another one that I latched onto due to the storytelling aspect of it. Now I'm talking about the impossible dream. And so, of course, as a recovering theater geek, I think of Man of La Mancha, of course. But I think this song has become more than just a beautiful song. It's become an anthem for many groups or individuals. Anyone really trying to overcome anything. This is just really ripe for the storytelling aspect of the song, as opposed to just hitting the notes.
Yeah, again, it's a sign of a great song in that it works in a specific context, like in the middle of, as you say, of a Broadway musical. But so many of these songs, you think of The Impossible Dream or You Never Walk Alone from Carousel, you know, people forget, you know, that they were originally from Broadway musicals because the context of the songs have been used for people in so many different experiences. So like The Impossible Dream for me, I often open my shows with it because, well, it's a great opening song to a concert because it gives a sense of, okay, tonight, folks, we're going on a journey. And that's often what I say at the top of my show. I'm taking you on a musical journey. And you're going to have your own experience of that because, like, The Impossible Dream is, you know, I think we all see part of ourselves in it because it speaks of overcoming moments that we felt were insurmountable, overcoming challenges and coming out the other end stronger. So, like, who doesn't resonate with adversity and, you know, that sense of coming through something difficult? So I think aside from the nostalgic side of things, the other very powerful thing is that I think you need to get across as a performer when you're picking a program is, are there songs with messages that everyone can connect to? Like, is there a universal element to this that I get up as Emma Cahill and I sing it because of what it means to me, but I can't necessarily dictate what it's going to mean to you, Davidson, the audience? That kind of open-endedness kind of works. It doesn't always have to be very context-driven. There can be that openness to it because that allows an audience member room to go on their journey.
And the world will be better for this. That one man, scorned and covered with scars, still strove with his last ounce of courage to fight the unbeatable foe.
So, you know, as I said earlier, the music is the conduit. The music just kind of happens, but it's kind of not about the music. It's about where your mind is racing to as you're listening to it. And that actually is the experience that people are having, as opposed to, you know, all the right songs in all the right places. It's like building a set list is important, but it's kind of about what's happening outside the room or the previous experiences they had, or maybe they have something coming up that they're worried about or whatever it is. So much of it is about where the audience member is themselves at a given point in their life. So I think people crave that little bit of escapism when they come to a show, and it allows them the room to go on those sort of mental journeys themselves for that 90 minutes or 2 hours, whatever it is.
Yeah, without a doubt. Completely. My purpose for going to a show of any kind is really to escape or leave behind at least, oh, whatever's going on in my life. Talking about the set list and starting people off on their journey, I mentioned Doug Lightenheimer a moment ago. He said that when you were there for the holiday concert, he didn't recall you having a set list, but rather calling out the songs as you went. Is this typical for you?
It can be. You know, I work with a fantastic pianist and he can kind of play anything at the drop of a hat. So, of course, we go out and we have a plan for the show. But sometimes you go out and, you know, certain nights audiences react in different ways. And sometimes in the middle of a show, if I feel like, okay, the audience is a little bit mellow here, we need to lift them, I'll turn to my pianist and say, let's throw this one in. So I think that spontaneity certainly helps me as a performer when I'm out doing 40, 50 shows. You know, that little bit of unplanned moment in the show is never a bad thing because, you know, you feel audiences react in different ways. And then other nights you might go out and do a little bit more of a straightforward set and it works perfectly because every room has a different energy, a different environment. As I mentioned to you, Christmas, people are in one sort of frame of mind. Coming into the spring, maybe there's that sense of looking forward to the year ahead, or, you know, obviously coming up to St. Patrick's Day, there's a huge focus on Ireland. So our set lists do vary, but even within that, yes, we would adjust the program if we feel like the audience needs something a little bit different, or maybe there's been too many upbeat songs and I need to bring them back down to a ballad. Or sometimes I'll just think of a song and think, do you know what, I haven't sung that in a long time, and I'll turn to Seamus, my pianist, and say, let's just do this one. Sometimes a story will come into my head and I'm like, I really want to tell this story, and this is the song that kind of epitomizes what that's all about. So yeah, the spontaneity is definitely there. I'd probably say that about 80% of the show is pretty consistent, but it's always nice to leave room for a little bit of magic.
Nice.
On the first day of January, 1892, they opened.
You mentioned something a little while ago about talking about, singing or telling the story of someone who's actually beyond your years. And this brings me to, well, the fact that I can easily ask about some of the American standards, Moon River or Some Enchanted Evening. I would like to hear about some of the, say, Irish standards. For us in the U.S., we may know and love them as songs of Irish origin, but not know a thing about the significance of them. And so there's one that I'd like to ask you about, and I don't know how much of a standard this truly is, but it certainly does apply to you singing a song of someone beyond your years, and that is Isle of Hope. Okay, this is a beautiful song with Ireland held dear in memory, but the island of this song is Ellis Island, so which closed in 47, you know, like before you were born?
Yeah, but I was born in 1990, so okay. I might sound like I'm in my early 50s, but I'm not quite there yet. But I take no offense. No, I mean, Isle of Hope is actually, you're right, it's not about Ireland at all. It's about Ellis Island, where many of the hopes and dreams of immigrants began, because if you made it to Ellis Island, you had survived the treacherous journey across the Atlantic. Some of the people from Ireland made it. They were known as the famine ships at the time, and many of them left a place called Dunbrody on the southern coast of Ireland. And, you know, if they were strong enough to make it on the ship, sometimes they maybe perished or even landed to the Isle of Hope, as you say. So that's, I think, why Ellis Island is referred to as that, because once you made it there, you would kind of cross the parapet and you were ready for the next journey, which obviously was going to be equally as difficult. But the song epitomizes that sense of leaving everything you know behind and starting on a whole new journey. And, you know, the song was written about a girl called Annie Moore who left in Hope in County Cork with her two younger brothers at the age of 16. And, I mean, the idea of that happening today, you couldn't even imagine it, but this is the reality for generations of people, not just from Ireland, but immigrants from all over the world. So, Isle of Hope, I think that the success of the song is as much about the beauty of the lyric and the melody as the actual story. I talked about earlier about great songs have stories and themes that everyone can resonate with, and, you know, everybody, certainly in America, can resonate with that story because it's the story of their grandparents or their great-grandparents. And I have people of all different backgrounds and cultures come up to me and tell me that that's the song that connected with the most for that reason, even though it's an Irish story. But I often say to people, this isn't an Irish story, it's America's story, it's your story. So when people are hearing it for the first time, I always encourage them to really listen closely to the words, because I think you're going to see part of your family in the song. So I'm not surprised you kind of singled that one out.
When you're 15 years, Isle of Hope, Isle of Tears, Isle of Freedom, Isle of Fears, but it's not the isle you left behind, that Isle of Hope, Isle of
Tears. I'd like to go away from, really, any Celtic Thunder, any of your solo works, and I'd like to go to Music Healing. This is found on your Facebook page and maybe some of your Q&As. Your sister is a music therapist, and are you starting to explore this as well, at least in practice or in theory?
I mean, I've always been someone who sees music as both a performative thing, and within that, I've certainly seen people have very profound experiences from being at the concerts through the storytelling, as I mentioned earlier. It's amazing what a song will kind of stir up in someone, maybe memories that they've kind of tried to shut away for many years. Maybe it connects to a loved one, or they've just maybe lost someone, and a song just immediately kind of triggers, you know, I suppose, sort of healthy emotion in them, and then maybe they need to release. My sister uses music to help people with kind of more day-to-day issues in terms of people with, you know, autism and even other sort of neurological diseases or deficiencies, and on a practical footing, it helps them get through their day or helps them communicate with the outside world. So they're similar, but obviously very different in that, you know, I would call her practice, there's a huge amount of nobility attached to it, because you're literally teaching people how to use music to help radically improve their lives on a daily basis. For me, I guess I give people moments, and, you know, maybe those moments last for a wee while, but it's a more intense experience in the moment and connects with them. So Yeah, I mean, it's something I'm very interested in terms of how can I maybe use a little bit of that knowledge to bring to the stage. And I talk about the power of music and what it can do for people. So she's certainly a springboard that I can use when I'm kind of exploring that for my own touring purposes.
And now I believe this is connected. Talk to me, please, about the recording that you're doing for the Halo Music Meditation app.
Yeah, so Halo has become, I suppose, an app that's been used, I think, by 10 million people monthly. And they approached me about recording some hymns for this coming Easter and beyond. It's a meditation app, but it's very much centered around the Catholic religion. And obviously, being from Ireland, they found that there'd be obviously a connection there with me. I grew up singing Catholic Church. I mean, I sing in all different denominations around the country. So, yeah, I've started working with them and I recorded 4 tracks for an Easter project. And that will be released in a few weeks' time, which I'm very excited about. But again, you know, using music, using spirituality to allow people a moment of healing or a moment of solace and peace, I think it epitomizes how important music is in our lives. It's not just going to a concert and escaping for a couple of hours, but again, on a daily basis, people wake up in the morning, open up the app, and it sets their day right, or it's the last thing they listen to at night before they go to bed. And so when I was approached about it, I was thrilled to be part of it, and I'm very excited to, I suppose, make my musical debut on the app and reach a whole new audience of people.
And I am strong. On your shoulders, you raise me up to more than I can be. You raise me up to more than I.
For this edition of KVCR, it's been music from and conversation with Emmett Cahill, some recordings with Celtic Thunder, some as a solo artist. Emmett will be in Palm Desert as a solo artist at St. Margaret's Episcopal Church February 5th as part of the Friends of St. Margaret's music series. More at stmargaret's.org. Also more at emmettcahill.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. For other events in the region, go to kvcrnews.org/calendar. Thanks again to Emmett Cahill, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, and Shireen Awad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.